welcome to The Executive Appeal, a show that convenes the world's most powerful and successful leaders to share mentoring and career advancement advice to help you successfully transition into senior level executive positions. I'm your host, Alex Trimble, award-winning speaker, author, and leadership expert with over a decade of experience coaching and advising some of our nation's most senior level government leaders. So if you're ready to reach your goals, let's get started. Welcome, 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 you beautiful, amazing, wonderful, cool, slick, awesome, all the good stuff. Ambitious leaders to another power-packed episode of the Executive Appeal Podcast. I am your host, Alex D. Trimble, and I am here thrilled to have you join us today. This podcast is where we go beyond the ordinary, moving past the cliches of just work hard to reach your goals to actually uncover the true secrets of success at the executive level. Now, before we dive into today's interview, I have some exciting news, which you know I'm going to share. Thanks to your incredible support, The Executive Appeal is now one of the top 5% most popular shows in the world. And let me be very clear when I say this, it didn't happen by accident. It was you who made this happen. It will be you who determines the continued success of this show. So here's our call to actions for all of our amazing listeners. If you enjoy this content, we bring each and every week and each and every month for now 4 years now, we ask for your support. Please click the like button, share your thoughts and questions in the comment section, and most importantly, share this episode with at least two of your friends or colleagues today. Your engagement and enthusiasm keeps this community thriving, and we couldn't be more grateful. Now, without any further ado, let me say today is a good day. See, today we have with us the always amazing Miss Jamie Fisher. Jamie is an award-winning executive, a mentor, a visionary leader in the automotive industry, serving as the vice president of operations for DriveTime Automotive Group, headquartered in Arizona. She leads and manages a diverse team across various functions to deliver exceptional results in customer satisfaction while driving innovation and transformation in their operations. She is originally from the great state of Florida and has a master's degree from University of Alabama, and more importantly, is the mother of two teenagers and proud wife of 20 years. How are you doing today, madam?
Good morning. I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much.
I don't know why this is on my head. Your proud wife of 20 years. Mm-hmm. My wife and I just hit our 10-year wedding anniversary, which then makes that we've been together for now 17 years. And I told my friends that I think we're now officially, veterans in this thing.
Yeah. So, you sure are.
Do you, if I can ask again, we're going to do our best here. If I can ask, like, if you wanted to give some advice to someone who is in a household and they are a high performer such as yourself, and they want to excel in their career, but also want to make sure they maintain that relationship they have in their family. What advice would you share with them to do that?
Yeah, that is, it's hard, right? Especially when you're the mom, right? Because there's a slightly different dynamic in the home for the mama. Be okay with not being there. Like, be okay with failure. And that doesn't mean you're missing out, by the way. Like, I have not missed out on anything. I feel like I have a great husband. I have a great support system, and my kids are really flexible and what have you. But I'm not at everything. And so you prioritize. And I'd said this before, and I'm trying to remember the exact quote, but Shonda Rhimes, she writes TV shows. She said, somebody asked her, how do you do it all? And she said, I don't. And she said, where you see me succeed in one part, I'm certainly failing in another. And you just have to be comfortable with that. And I absolutely live that and feel that. And so it'd be okay with it. You don't have to be at all the things all the time. And sometimes that means you prioritize your home life over work. And sometimes you're prioritizing your work life over home. And there's no such thing as exact balance. It's going to be always skewed one way or another. And that's okay. It's all completely okay. My kids are not missing out on their mom or not missing out on a relationship. When I'm with them, I'm fully present. When I'm at work, I'm fully present. And everybody gets the 100% of me when they get me. And I think everyone's just okay and thriving and surviving in that. And it takes a lot of pressure off, by the way, which sort of relieves all that mom guilt that you walk around feeling. and it's good. It's positive.
I love your answer. I think it's spot on. When I'm coaching my clients, and they're all executives, they're all high performers, they're all, you know, very ambitious. And one of the challenges they tend to have is, like you said, managing that, you know, how that guilt of, oh my God, I want more, I want to be successful. But if I do that, am I leaving my family behind, and so on and so forth? And when we talk about this and we have those conversations, one of the big things that tends to come out is they're comparing their family to someone else's family. Oh, well, yeah. Person there, they're doing these things with their kids, or that person there, they're doing these things with their spouse, and I'm not doing that. It must mean I'm bad or I'm wrong. What are we doing wrong? And I'm like, well, you know, you're not their family. Like, they're not your family. What works for you works for you, and you have to be confident in that, you know?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, thank God for technology. We've, you know, a lot of FaceTimed on travel trips and what have you. And you know, you just let it be okay with that. I think there's a reconciler, a settling that you have to have kind of internally of deciding that you're not trying to be, you know, Miss Susie Q from next door. You're trying to be who you are, and and your life doesn't have to look like theirs. And sometimes my life looks like FaceTime, you know, math problems over a FaceTime call. And sometimes I'm front seat in the bleachers of the baseball game. You know, it just depends on where we're at in life. And, you know, everyone sort of knows that, and in my family knows that, and is okay with it. And it's relieving, quite frankly.
You know, what's funny is it sounds, what you're saying is that you're, one, prioritizing, and two, you're making decisions based on the situation, right? Like, sometimes it's Facebook math problems, and sometimes it's in front of the bleachers. And I made this post on LinkedIn this past week, and I shared it also via YouTube for those who want to look it up. I talked about the difference between a good decision and a bad decision. And I was asked it the other day by one of my clients, and I was like, look, you know, here's the reality. No decision is, I don't believe that any decision is inherently good or bad. I think that what determines whether a decision is good or bad is whether it gets you closer or further away from your goals. If it gets you closer, then it's a good decision. If it takes you further away, then it's a bad decision. The problem that most people have is that they haven't taken the time to determine what the results are. What results do they want? What are their goals? And then that then can help you determine what decisions are good or bad. They're just kind of going through life making decisions. And it sounds like you, at some point, whether consciously or unconsciously, made a decision that, you know, regards to my results in my family or what my work life, I want it to look like this. It's going to be like this. I'm going to engage it this way. Me and my family want it like this, which means that in this situation, I need to be on the phone. In this situation, I need to be here. Like, it feels like you have made some sort of decision about how your life should look.
Yeah, I would say in my definition of it, the difference between a good and bad decision has been experience. And so typically you make a bad decision, you gain experience, and then you make a good decision. And so, and that's where good decisions come from in my world, experience. And so, mine has really happened over time, right? I made bad decisions, and I was sacrificing, you know, things at work for things that I probably should not have been sacrificing at home, and vice versa, sacrificing things at home or at work that to have to be, you know, there at home. And then I realized, like, gosh, I have so much pressure on myself, and I have all this guilt about not being where I'm supposed to be at the right time, and miss, and then FOMO, especially, you know, as you're rising the ranks, you get the FOMO at work. And so all of that kind of came down, and I had to decide to myself, like, okay, I've now been through this experience. What do I want it to look like? I get to choose. I get to decide. And so for me, the good decisions came from experience, from making bad decisions and saying, I don't want it to be like this. And then, yes, to your point, like, the goal is, like, I want to be able to do both. You can do both really successfully, quite frankly. You can do both without all that pressure, and you don't have to run yourself ragged to do it. You just prioritize And sometimes you miss out, and sometimes you have to decide which ones you miss out on and be okay with it. And that doesn't mean you go backwards in your career, you go backwards as a mother, or it just means that you chose which one you're going to put 100% of your time into, and the other one will wait. And it does wait. It always will.
Thank you so much. And you bring up your experience, and I hope this is something I can ask you. And if you don't want to answer, don't have to.
I'm open. You can ask.
But you have some pretty crazy experiences. You and I talked about how you got your footing in this industry. Do you mind sharing like the brief version of how this happened? Yeah. This is pretty crazy. Yeah,
it's a long story, but so I like to say I got into the automotive industry on accident. I'm not a car person. I am now, but I never was like a car person and, oh, I need to be in automotive. I actually have a human resource background, interestingly enough. But after September 11th in 2001, an organization I was with shut down and I had an opportunity to work at an automotive dealer. And they had two buildings. And so I was supposed to go where like the admin HR side was. And I went to the service department, very technical job. Interestingly enough, they had an interview at the exact same time and that didn't show up. And so here I am. I'm here for my interview. We sit down, the service manager and I really hit it off, quite frankly. But about, you know, halfway through, we're both saying like, I don't think I'm qualified for this job. But I don't think you have any skill set whatsoever that we need for this job, but I really like you. And so we were able to sort of have a great connection. At the end of the day, I ended up getting offered both jobs, the HR job and the service drive job. And, you know, I was eager enough. I said, I think I'm going to do the service. It's new. It's interesting and new and something I've never done. Certainly a challenge. I did not realize it's full commission, required a significant amount of technical knowledge. And the funny story is the first week, we have kind of a dispatch team. One of the technicians was just cussing the manager up one side, down the other, like, I can't believe you brought in this person. We're all going to starve. I have kids I have to put in college. And, you know, at first I was like, oh gosh, what have I done? I have no business being in this job. And then, you know, my resolve kicked in. I said, wait a minute, I can do this. And so, you know, I had these little notebooks and customer would come in and they'd, you know, say they have a problem with their car and I'd draw a little picture of it because I didn't know how to explain it. And I'd walk back into the shop and the techs would sort of roll their eyes and, you know, why are you here? We're supposed to use Porters. And I go, I don't know how to tell you what's wrong with the car. And so then I'd show them a little picture and I go, it has a check engine light. And they're like, oh, we're never going to make any money. And then, but over a series of months and time and, you know, I was just real persistent and I figured it out. And interestingly enough, cars always kind of break the same way. And so I figured it out pretty quickly. And all of a sudden, I started just selling a whole bunch of service and customers, because I didn't know any better. And then I started bringing customers back into the shop with me and creating relationships. I learned that you're supposed to create a relationship between the actual mechanic and the customer. And customers love that. And I ended up making the technician team that I had made more money in the first year with me than they had with anybody else. And so it was a journey and it was super fun. And but I fell in love with the industry at that point. Like I fell in love with the customers and it's really complicated, like a really complicated industry. It's one of the three largest purchases and customer will ever make in their lifetime. And they break. There's over 3,000 mechanical parts on a car that can break down at any point in time. And so there's all these nuances to this industry. And so I just sort of fell in love with it. But I would say I went to the wrong place on accident and got myself a job in automotive on accident.
I think, again, for all of those who are listening, this is it's a pretty amazing story. And there's a couple of really key points. One, you showed up to the wrong interview, but you presented yourself so well that they were like, you're not qualified, but we need you.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think it was about you that you were able to convey for a job that you were not qualified for, like by your own admission?
Yeah. I think this is like, especially kind of relevant to today's world, because we do a lot of interviews and whatnot. I think somewhere, some college sat some people down and said, you're supposed to use all these buzzwords and be this person when you interview. And so it's kind of turned into that. And at the time, nobody had sat me down and told me that. And so I really just was me. I was like my whole personality. And I understood like what skills I had, what strengths I had, and I was confident in those. And I brought that to the table and I said, this is who I am, take it or leave it. And I've really done that in all of my career. That's never changed. I've said, this is who I am. This is what I'm really good at. This is the strength that I bring to the table. And this is what I present, but I'm also super willing to learn. I've always been willing. I call that a non-trainable, but I'm really willing to learn. I'm super flexible and I can try and do just about anything and I will. And so I'd say like, that's what I brought to the table. I think when I meet with candidates today and people that are coming in trying to get a position with my organization, it's the one thing that really is a differentiator. The ones that come in and try and be the person they think I want them to be versus the ones that come in and just are themselves and are able to adequately and articulately express who they are and what they bring to the table. And then I can figure out how do I make that work for me? Yeah. I think that's the difference maker.
I think you're spot on, obviously. I think that people walk into those situations and they act like that because of fear.
Oh, yeah.
Of doing bad, the fear of not getting the opportunity. What happens if I don't get this opportunity? I've had people, I told me like, literally, I have fun during my interviews. When I'm interviewing with people, like I have fun because I have this sense that if you don't select me, then I probably wasn't the right one.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't want to work in an environment. I don't want to be in an environment where you didn't want me. There's actually a lot of research that found that there's a great book called Power by Jeffrey Pfeffer. And he was like, he looked at organizations that where managers were either they hired their employee, they hired them, or they were forced to hire someone. And what they found is that simply by the manager hiring that person, regardless of their skills, simple by the manager hiring that person, they were more likely to get promotions and raises versus someone who was forced to hire someone. So I'm like, I don't want to be in a situation where someone doesn't want me there. So like, I might as well, like you said, be me, do the best I can, be very confident in who I am. But also I like to make sure people understand, like you, whenever possible, you want people chasing you.
Yeah. Like,
it's much better to be in a situation where companies want you versus you're chasing them, because you could say, oh, you know what? This isn't working out. Cool. I can go over here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the things I always tell candidates when I'm interviewing with them is like, this is an employment relationship. You have to want us as much as we want you. And so that's when it really works and it really vibes together. And I think I usually say that right in the very beginning too of the interview process. Like, this is an employment relationship. You're interviewing me as much as I'm interviewing you. You have to want me as much as I want you. So you need to be able to ask, you have to ask me questions too. Is this what you're looking for? And I always find that sort of drops their guard a little bit, and then they start to be their own selves. And then you really find out, okay, this is the person I want to connect with. And you have to think about, if you think about it that way too, like you don't just go date everyone on the planet who's willing to take you, right? Like you go and find the right match. And I think whenever I have gone and looked, and I haven't looked for a job in over 12 years, but whenever I've gone and looked for a job, that's, I'm wanting to find a match for me, not just whoever's the next available bachelor, right? Like I'm going for the one that's going to be a connection for me. And I think up and comers and people that are looking at where they can go find a career, they should be thinking about, is this as much a match for me as I am for them? And it drops their guard, and then they get to be more their real self. And then that those connections, regardless of skill, can really happen.
Well, I mean, you've used this word a few different times. One, you use the word connection, and you've also used the word relationships. And I think, again, at that level. So here's an example of someone I'm working with. Wonderful, phenomenal individual interviewing for a very senior level position at a very, very large organization. Had to go through 9 interviews, right? Very, very competent, extremely competent in what they do. They were worried about whether they're going to get the job or not. And I told them at that point, I'm like, look, at this level, it's not about your competence. You wouldn't have been in that. So you wouldn't even have the opportunity to shoot for that position if they didn't feel like you were competent. At that point, it's about relationships. It's about philosophy and things like, you know, that fit. Like, are we going to enjoy working with this person? And I think a lot of people also forget that, like when they're looking for jobs and they don't get the opportunity they're looking for, or, you know, they apply for something, they interview for, they don't get it. Sometimes, again, especially at those higher levels, they walk away and say, oh my God, what did I need to learn? What do I need to do more? And sometimes it's not the competence. It's just at that level, it's just about those relationships.
Yeah, it's about, it's the old, it's not me, it's you. It's not you, it's me. The relationships really matter. And by the way, that matters in your whole career, right? So one of the things I would put the culture in the organization that I'm in up against any organization I've ever been a part of in my life. And part of that is because we believe we get things done through relationships. And so we just don't have great results or great metrics or great KPIs or great profitability. None of that just happens because we tell people we have a joke, go do gooder. We don't say go do gooder. We say we build relationships and we build why, and people know that we are, don't just care about the 5,000 employees of the organization. We care about the 5,000 families that are connected to those 5,000 employees and how well they succeed. And so because of that, we are so much faster, so much more effective, and we can turn on a dime as an organization because everyone has the relationship to be able to feel like I trust and I love and I depend. And it's a good safe space to do that.
Again, you said some words I want to key in on. You talked about the importance of relationships, which, you and I are in alignment with, especially in my book, Relationships That Work. Go through very intentional steps you can utilize to build relationships with your colleagues, your customers, whoever you need to be working with, because it's really critical. Two, you talked about trust, and then you talked about speed. And I think that's very, very telling and wonderful because, the reality is as trust increases within organizations, the speed at which they get things done increases.
Oh, yeah.
And also the cost of things actually decrease because you're not having to cover your behind on everything. Yep. Like that trust piece is really important.
Oh, I totally agree. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all. That's where the whole relationship parts come. And we say we have sort of four jobs, right? It's like hire the right people, give them the goals, give them the tools, and then hold them accountable. And if you are consistent with that, and they're accumulative, right? If you don't hire the right people, it doesn't matter in the first place. So you start with that. But if you're consistent with that and you really do actually care and help, and that accountability piece is not always, it's the recognition of the job well done as much as it is the recognition of the job not well done. Mm-hmm. The rest kind of just works itself out, and that trust happens and people are willing to run through a block wall, and that the speed and all of that comes in with it. So that's something that my experience in our current organization that I'm in, it's been really fun to grow and build and watch.
It's interesting. We were talking about this trust component really quickly. I'm working with, a great client, phenomenal at what he does. And it's crazy because they have a big rumor mill moving right now. There's a situation going on. There's a lot of rumors spreading and moving around. And it's not because the guy has done anything wrong. It's because a lack of communication, right? There is an idea that, we don't know anything more yet, right? So when something happens, I'll tell everyone. But in that space, rumors are created, right? And so it is talked about just like how important it is we start, getting them to do, weekly and bi-weekly town hall meetings, just so everyone has an opportunity to come in, ask their questions. You can fill as many of you as you can. But just doing that small thing helped build trust. Again, even no one was doing anything wrong, but it was just a lack of that void of communication,
Yeah, those touch points are so important. Another, thing that I've experienced is having those skip level meetings are very helpful as well, so that you can make sure that in between the different levels that the communication that you want is consistent, and that people are getting the same message, that it's not telephone gaming its way down and it turns out to be something totally different. But that's really important. I would agree. I think, it's also really important to have your ear to the ground, right? Like have a grapevine to what people are saying. Because if you didn't, sometimes what happens in organizations is those rumor mills happen and nobody knows about it until all of a sudden it's not a rumor anymore. Now it's truth as far as people are concerned.
Exactly.
So then that's a lot harder to fix. And so having ear to the ground and knowing that those things are happening, to be able to get in front of it, is really important also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to hear from you. Like what, again, the people who are listening to this podcast are generally either already executives or they're looking to get into the executive ranks. what would you recommend that organizations do to identify those people who are ambitious, who want to move to those next level, and what do you do to support them?
Yeah. You know, historically you'd find it's often like out of sight, out of mind, insight in mind. So you just, whoever's the loudest or whoever's the most upfront is the one, or the ones who are getting the attention and the development and what have you. But you miss out on a lot of gems, you know? And so I think on behalf of the organization, I think executives in particular have to be very intentional about relationship building. So going back to that, but it's the truth. And so making sure that there is regular touch points, making sure those skip levels are happening. Town halls, like you mentioned, are an absolute great idea. Having the ability to receive information upward, and then when you receive it, be receptive of it, which sounds crazy, like to ask for information and then not be receptive, but you'd be surprised. But to create space so that the team at any level can have interaction. So one of the things I work at Drive Time is literally our CEO is cell phones posted, myself, you can call us and we answer. We answer the phone. I have relationships with people all across the country at any and every level, from mechanic to leader to regional director, et cetera. And we make it a point to regularly have those touch points to be open and available so that they can come out and communicate, so that it doesn't have to be, I have to be extra, extra insight in mind. There's going to be a touch point. I'm going to have the opportunity. And then I think also, you know, there's a saying, let the work speak for itself. You know, we are very intentional, and I think executives should be very intentional about not just looking at the metrics and the results that happen, but why? If you're really crushing something and doing why are you crushing it, and who's contributing to that? And then go find those people and recognize them. And that's something that I'm proud of, that we are really intentional and I think do a good job at, is going and find out if we have a dealership or a team that's out there really killing it, let's go tell them, great job. Make sure that they know and understand what they're doing that's causing that good, that then you can go share with the ones that maybe aren't doing as good, and everybody rises together.
I love it. And I love that word that you use, intentionality. I love that word. So now let's talk about you. So you talked about from an organizational standpoint, how they should be identifying and supporting those people who are ambitious and ready to move forward. What would you say to those people, what would you say to them to make sure they can stand out and have those opportunities afforded to them?
Yeah. So kind of the opposite, be in sight and be in mind. So I think, you know, it's great if you want to sit back and just let your work speak for yourself, but also speak for yourself, sell yourself, get out there and say hello. When you have the opportunity to reach out to an executive or somebody in your organization, that reach out to them, ask them what the plan is. How's the vision? How are we working towards it? Don't be afraid to challenge upwards and really be a part of the strategy, be a part of the vision. You don't have to just be the receiver of direction at all times. And so I would say, be in sight, be in mind. Another thing that I just say personally, that has just served me well in all of my career, and I think gives credit to where I'm at today, is I just say yes. And so as opportunities come open, whether it's lateral, two steps back, yes, I'll try it all. And because of that, I've just gained more experience, more knowledge, more relationships, more connections, more networking. All of the things that have gotten me where I am today is because I've just said, yes, I'll try new things and take on whatever's possible, whether I know how to or not. I'll figure it out as I go. But yes, the answer for me is always going to be yes, I'll try it. And so I think if you're up and coming and you're trying to figure out what's next for you in life, that's the best advice I have. Say yes and be in sight.
You know, it's funny. Well, one, I completely agree with you. It was funny as you talk about say yes. And I was, again, having a conversation with a client the other day, and we were talking about their next steps and what they should do. And they were like asking me, like, you know, what should I do? How do I know what the next step should be? How do I know what my ultimate goals is, and so on and so forth? And I said, well, you know what the answer to that is. And they're like, what? And I'm like, you know, you were just telling me. You're like, well, Alex, I know you're going to say the journey. The journey is really important. And I'm like, yeah, The journey is important. And why is the journey important? The journey is important because as you're on this journey, you are learning. You are learning what you like, what you don't like, who you can partner with, what opportunities there are, and so on and so forth. Like, there's a whole list of things that you learn through the journey. The interesting thing about the journey is that you cannot take a journey. No one can. There has never been a journey where no one took a step.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, a journey by definition means that you have to act. You have to do something. There is no journey if you're just standing still. You have to do something. And once you start doing something and taking steps, then your journey begins. It doesn't happen the other way around. So I love what you're talking about. I want to really quickly, I know we got to wrap up really soon, but I'd love to hear from you. What are the closing bits of advice or thoughts you'd like to share with our audience as we wrap up?
Yeah, I'd say, and I want to comment on your journey because I think that's really important too. I would say, like, especially when you're young and up and coming, like, everybody has this goal, this vision, this destination, and then you start on your journey. And I think as I've gotten older and maybe wiser as I've got along, the destination becomes less and less important, honestly. And it changes immensely. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. As I was younger, I was like, oh, I want to be an executive. I want to be here. Now that I've gotten to where I'm at, like, now I want to be influential and I want to be inspirational and I want people to come up behind me and I want to have a, I want to have an army of growth that I've been able to inspire and influence and motivate. And so I'd say, like, that where the goal even becomes different as you age and mature and get more and more experience. And so I think that that's really important. Thank you so much for having me on, by the way, today, but I'd say, I think it's really important for people who are up and coming to just really, first of all, like, understand, do some deep dives and understand what are your strengths? What are you really good at? And it doesn't have to be like a specific skill or a specific, oh, I'm good at this one thing, like, personality wise and like innately within you, what really drives you and gets you excited about life and what you're good at. And then from there, you know, focus on learning your way through that, like, how can you start with what's immediately around that, the ancillary learnings, if you will, to what you're immediately good at, and then grow. And so I think if you have a growth mindset personally and individually, then you start to put that outwardly towards others. And so I think growth is probably the best thing for anyone in any industry, is to be able to understand, like, how am I better tomorrow than what I am today? And just being open to the opportunities to grow and learn. And then that will take you immensely different places. And I think one other thing that's really important to that is, like, when you're uncomfortable is when you grow. So, like, getting used to being uncomfortable, asking for that tough or hard feedback, taking that tough or hard feedback and changing or doing something different with it, is all only going to help people as they continue to grow and move up within different organizations. And then obviously I would be remiss to not use any time I have on here to share, you know, Drive Time, the organization I'm with, is growing immensely. We have opportunities all over the country. And we just absolutely love to take on people who are willing and able to come in to learn, who are flexible and bring that energy and want to grow not only their own personal careers, but with us to help to create opportunities and improve lives. And so that's where I would say, there are opportunities all over. You should always seize them, but there's plenty with us. So make sure you check us out.
I love it. I just have to chime in on two things you said. I need to underscore, make sure everyone heard these points. One, you talked about the goal changing, the goalpost changing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So many people don't begin their journey because they're like, well, where am I headed? And they don't know, because I don't know exactly where I'm headed. What if I want to go there, but what if that's not the right place for me? They'll stall themselves for years, mm-hmm. right? Where they could have made some sort of movement. And again, to your point, as you progress, as you take action and move on your journey, the destination by definition will change because you'll have new experience, you have new opportunity, you'll be exposed to new things and opportunities that you would have never thought even existed. And so don't be afraid of a shifting goal. I actually see it, instead of being shifting, I see it as refining. You're going through life, you're refining what you truly believe. And you talked about the importance of just, like you said, putting yourself out there and taking on things that are difficult and challenging. And I'm going to use a very simple example. But we all know, well, let's say most of us know, that when you go to the gym, you're trying to pump some iron or you're running or something like that. The growth doesn't start until the pain starts. Mm-hmm. If you're doing something, you're like, oh, this is fun. There's no growth. It is not until you say, Muhammad Ali talked about, you know, he didn't start counting his sit-ups until they started hurting. Mm-hmm. Like, he do sit-ups, and then once they start hurting, okay, now one, now two. The same thing actually happens for our mind. You know, if we're not challenging ourselves, we're not putting our mind in a situation where like, oh my God, can I do this? Is this above me? Let me just try it. If it's emotionally challenging, let me try it. If we're not putting ourselves in those situations, we're not providing ourselves our minds the opportunity to grow and become stronger and more resilient. And so these things that you were talking about, again, they're just so spot on. Thank you so much, Miss Jamie, for coming on today. I appreciate you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so glad you had me. This has been fun.
Oh, like I promise you, this is not the last time you'll be on here. We got to make it happen again. And this is not the last time you and I are going to talk for definitely.
Absolutely.
So everyone, you know where I'm going with this. If you found anything of value from today's episode, there is absolutely no way that you could have listened to this and not found any value. So let's just say you found value from this episode. So don't just look back, reach back, bring someone else to the table, share this with them, click the like, click the subscribe, share your comments, because all of that helps push this information out to more and more people, which then it means it can impact the lives of more and more people. So don't just look back, reach back. And as always, I encourage you all to stay strong, stay positive, and definitely stay moving. See ya. Thanks for listening to The Executive Appeal with Alex Trumbull. I invite you to follow The Executive Appeal wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow me, your host, Alex Trumbull, across all socials or via email for exclusive webinars, courses, and speaking engagements on continued topics of executive leadership. So until next time, stay strong, stay positive, and definitely stay moving.